next speaker will be Steve Huffy, and he is speaking on the ultimate purpose of stewardship. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. That's our verse for the conference. And while Steve is, there's Steve. While Steve's coming up, I'll pull up his slides. Let's see. Why don't you look with me? Mm-hmm. Which one's yours? This one with an H?
Yeah, PowerPoint.
Okay. There we go. Slideshow. We go from the beginning. And it should show up, and there you are.
Great.
Oh, I have more to say. Wait a minute. I forgot.
I have more introduction for Steve. Okay. Steve is a private scholar from the Los Angeles area who has spoken at several ASA Western Winter Conferences at Azusa Pacific and was once presented at a national ASA meeting in Oklahoma. He's interested in the research and interpretation of early biblical Hebrew, especially as applied to the intersection of faith and science.
Thank you, and blessings to you, and it's God bless you all. It's great to just be here. It's like vacation for me. There are three papers that are being passed out. The main one's called Ultimate Purpose of Stewardship. On that, there's quite a bit more than we'll cover, but if you have interest, there'll be further information there that'll be back up in corollaries. Our conference verse is Psalms 24:1, a psalm of David, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. Starting from the introduction, what biblical focus can motivate environmental stewardship, science, and doing the will of God? The big picture of Christian creation from its beginning to its ending shows that everything, including us, supports his primary purpose for separating evil from goodness. From this verse, we will look at the purpose and rights of God in everything. Within that context, we will look at our purpose, too. Genesis gives impetus to revelation about the purpose and design of creation. We will further look at the ASA conference verse and 1 Corinthians 10:25 through 26 about rights over creation. And we will next approach why the universe was created, why we exist, and how that motivates stewardship. We will consider a cosmic view of the eschatological parable about the separation of the wheat and tares as a metaphor about separation of goodness and evil. The big picture will also be viewed from the claim of Peter that Christ was foreordained from before creation to die on the cross for redemption of humanity, not just ordained from the time of Adam and Eve sinning in the garden. This is very important. This view will shift our focus away from humanity in the garden to the larger picture of creation. These two New Testament passages lead to the creation story about the purpose of creation and stewardship. The table of contents is for you later. It's not for us now. At the bottom, there is a personal application. I never let anybody leave on theory. So the application is actually about forgiveness, and you'll see how that works in. If you go to the back side of the page to page two, we'll begin at the word begin. Who has rights and who is rights? In the Psalm of David, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. The ASA conference verse has in its sentence Lord as possessive. Hebrew states it to Jehovah. Lord, such as Young's literal translation, a psalm of David to Jehovah is the earth and fullness, the world and the inhabitants of it. Hebrew grammar can help here. In the diagram of the verse, Hebrew script is read from right to left. At each word, English pronunciation of Hebrew and definitions are left to right. In Hebrew, the psalm is written, as you look over to the arrow there, to David. Psalm, attributing the psalm to him. Next to the introduction, the psalm likewise continues to Jehovah, and then is followed by all that is attributed to him, to Jehovah's. The earth and its fullness, the Lord as inhabited, a different word than earth, and would as would naturally follow from an inhabited world, its inhabitants. Tevel is meaning the moist earth. It's usually used in a poetic situation and means inhabited world. My revised mechanical translation thus is, to David is ascribed this psalm. To Jehovah is ascribed or attributed the earth and everything that fills it, the inhabited world and inhabitants dwelling in it. Thus, as everything in the psalm is attributed to Jehovah, he is the property owner and has vested rights to him with freedom to use everything for his interests. So we must establish rights. In 1 Corinthians 10:25-26, Apostle Paul quoted a portion of Psalm 24:1, applying it to human freedom. It states, eat anything that is sold in the meat market without raising any question about it on the grounds of conscience, for the earth and everything in it belong to the Lord. Herein, freedom has rights come from, human rights come from divine rights. Freedom is an unusual word. Let's consider it for a moment. It has two roots. It is like two things in the old Sertz commercials, mint and a golden drops of Rensen, bing, bing, two and one. Freedom is the word free, with D-O-M of the root dominion. We are freed from one dominion to serve in that of God. Which dominion has better rights? By looking at two New Testament passages, we will gain astounding views given by Jesus and Peter that the creation exists to bring a final, ultimate order from chaos, itself existing before creation, that is chaos. The passages will lead to Genesis and the creation story, which will focus on the purpose of stewardship, environment, science, and doing the will of God. On subsection 1, you'll notice that's indented. That's for later reading and is information that backs up and extends. So go to the next page, if you would, on two New Testament passages. The wheat and the tares is a separation process toward order. The parable reads about God, Satan, the world, and humanity in a story about separation toward ultimate order. All players were present in the garden in the beginning of the battle. It is a double parable found in two places, Matthew 13 through 24, 30, and then 36 through 43. Rather than reading everything, I'm going to paraphrase by reading the boldface. The enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat, and then the servant said unto him, will you then that we go gather them up? And master said, nay, lest while you gather up the tares, ye root up also the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest, and gather ye first the tares and burn them, then gather the wheat into the barn. Parable 2 is then halted and continued after parables 3 and 4, which are the parables of the mustard seed and the leavened bread. Splitting the second parable is a literary device not explained here. The second part of the second parable has eschatological applications and forms doctrine. Often, parables are vague and useful to inspire thought, but not complete for good doctrine. In this second part, Jesus fully explained this parable to his disciples. Second part, bold face, for paraphrase. The field is the world, and the good seed are the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the children of the wicked one. Harvest is the end of the world. The Son of Man gathers out of the kingdom all things that offend and them that do iniquity, cast them into the furnace of fire, and there shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. The righteous shall shine forth at the sun in the kingdom. And this gives an overview, I think, of what creation is doing in process from a New Testament view. Let's get a further look, a cosmic look from Peter. In 1 Peter 1:19, he's talking about the death of Christ on the cross. He's saying, but with the precious blood of Christ, as a lamb without blemish and without spot, who verily was foreordained before the foundation of the world, was made manifest in these last times. God knew before creation, thus before Adam and Eve sinned, before the garden, that he would die on the cross for our sins. He knew that Satan would slither into the garden and to challenge Adam and Eve to doubt his goodness. Simply, if God is just omniscient and we didn't know, have this verse, God knew. Humanity acted therein without interference from God. The garden fall happened as a result of Adam and Eve's and the free wills and even that of Satan. Yet God expected to die on the cross for humanity. Why did God create, knowing that he would experience evil and suffering? Evil is larger than the garden. Subsections comes next for later reading of your interest, and that continues quite far to the end of subsection 2. What is the plan, or his plan, for the seventh day? Too often, we focus on the garden of humanity as the primary driving focus needing remedy. Our stewardship can become confused if we keep such a narrow focus. We, as the apex of creation on the sixth day, were made for a purpose of God played out in the seventh day. 6 days of creation supported and led to the seventh day, and the very good plan begun from before creation. And that word before is important. Sometimes it says from the creation of the world, and people interpret the world as being the inception of the Jewish race, but this is before. Humanity's remedy is essential, though not primary. The closing action of the first creation, account at 131, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good, and the evening and the morning were the sixth day. The passage does not claim creation to be perfect, but to be very good, to support the final segment of the plan in the seventh day. Was creation perfect? No. Satan slithered into the garden. 6 times, in fact, in the creation account, God states that it was good, and the creation was bringing the chaos to order, so there was a lot of chaos on each of those statements of good. Each 6 days of creation stages brought higher order and diminishing disorder. Each creation statement of good gave approval to a functional part of the whole creation. It also supported the next level of creation, a thought not yet perfect. The end of creation was called very good, but the process of separating evil from goodness continued today in the seventh day, today. Let us look more closely at separation in the Genesis creation story, so claims just stated above have clarity for stewardship toward the Lord. The Bible states 6 times, and the evening and morning was the second, third, sixth day. The Jewish day begins in the evening as a pattern to remember the creation. The Genesis story often uses primary roots, important. In a concordance or lexicon for the Genesis creation, words need to be followed to the primary roots. The story is very basic, pure, and powerful. The word evening in Hebrew is arev, and its primary root is traced to arab, which means to become dusky, to intermix, and mingle. It is a time when the waning sunlight dims the view of the eyes to the surroundings. Things become diffuse and disorderly, to intermix. Strong's concordance number for arev is H6153 and has those primary roots there. Similarly, the Hebrew word for morning is boker, and means dawn. Its primary root, boker, means in a general sense to break forth or to consider. It is a time when the sunlight increases vision of the surroundings to become orderly. It's parts for consideration. Evening and morning in that sequence for each creation day signifies going from a relative level of disorder in creation to a next higher level of order. The Jewish day memorializes 6 significantly creative segments of time when God undertook to limit the chaos and progressively bring higher order day by day. Each creation day completes a major physical system in creation. Each day's new system also acted as a platform for the next. All creation days progress toward the seventh day. All creation was designed to support humans in the seventh day for doing his work of separating evil from goodness, like the wheat and tares, to produce wheat heads or tare heads to be eternally separated. When God, Shabbat, ceased from creation, he did not rest in order to have a long refreshment and begin snoring. He didn't go to Maple Hall and say, I cease, I'm snoring. He designed to plan for work focused on in the seventh day. We are essential to that plan, but not his primary focus, as we think in the garden. The seventh day at Genesis 2:3 is doubly blessed and sanctified, set apart. Seventh day, very important, for a purpose. The process of separation from the chaos and evil ultimately ends by evil being separated to the lake of fire and goodness to heaven forever. Thus ends the seventh day. Similarly, the book of Hebrews gives a creation overview of the final rest at the end of the seventh day. Hebrews 4:9. In the Bible, the only Greek use of the word rest, ceasing in Greek, sabbatismos, is at one verse at Hebrews 4:9. It is a reference to the original Hebrew Shabbat at creation at Genesis 2:2-3. It relates to the future end of the seventh day, also a rest Shabbat from our work as God did from his. 4:8. For if Jesus had given them rest, referring to the promised land, then he would not afterward have spoken of another day. There remaineth therefore a rest, sabbatismos, to the people of God. For he that is entered into rest ceased from his own works, and let us labor to enter into that rest. The next section here, section 3, is for your interest in reading later. And at beginning with the creation was separation toward order, two basic observations. The verb translated created in Genesis 1:1 is bara. It is found six times in the first creation passage of Genesis 1:1-2:3. It is also mistranslated. And I give a footnote to an excellent article on that in the Journal of Hebrew Scriptures. From comparative uses of its verb forms in the Bible, bara normally means to separate a space. It is basic to creation. Its intensive form is to cut a space, like cut a grove of trees. For example, the doctrinal verse in 45:7 has often been a conundrum. It has been translated, the Lord creates bara evil and creates bara darkness. No, he separates. The full verse below gives some details. I form yatsar, it's a process, it's not bara, the light, and I create bara darkness, separate. I make asah, the most prevalent verb in Genesis 1, peace, and create, separate, darkness. I, the Lord, do all these things. Genesis creation separated the initial chaos into greater order day by day. Evening of disorder to morning of order. The accompanying paper has a passage, bara, has more details on that. In this light, the difficult verse of Isaiah makes sense to reveal the directive of God for its time, and really all time, to separate darkness and separate evil while making light and peace. As in Genesis, and now, separation of goodness from evil forever is the reason and purpose for the universe. A synopsis of the thesis. Our works on earth will be separated like wheat and tares, and we too will be separated. Thereafter, the intertwined roots of evil and goodness will no longer have holding power. The earth supports this goal. The purpose motivates stewardship of everything and of its making. There is a problem from before creation. The good omniscient God is solving it by means of creation. As stewards of God, we must preserve his creation, what supports the process. To God, it can all be a snap of a finger or even no time at all, but timing is his and timing is not ours. The number seven has great application in the Bible, and as in the 6 days of creation, the seventh last day includes stewardship, science, and separating, doing his will. I'm going to skip down, there's some arrows, and skip down to the bottom of the page, the core gospel of separating and forgiveness. Humanity's separating work of God in the seventh day finds essential direction in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5 through 7. The sermon in chapter 6 includes the Our Father prayer, sometimes called the Lord's Prayer, Disciples' Prayer. The prayer is a primer for essential beliefs and discipleship to help us live as does Christ. The literary form used in the book of Matthew causes the fifth stanza of the prayer to be highlighted after the prayer. It involves salvation. The fifth stanza reads, "And forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors." It is further developed after Matthew 14 and 15. "If you forgive trespasses, your heavenly Father will forgive you. If you don't, he will not forgive you." So we should take this seriously. It has to do with our trespasses, and I think salvation. Jesus came to earth, in fact, to forgive and to die that we be forgiven. He expects like behavior. It is a separation of evil and goodness. It seriously has to do with trespasses and salvation. Forgiveness office takes a tremendous amount of work. This is the central part of the Sermon on the Mount for practical life and eternal life. The rest of this paper for your own perusal has to do with forgiveness, and I hope you enjoyed it a lot. Blessings. Questions?
Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
We've got about 3 minutes for questions.
I didn't quite follow your link between stewardship and forgiveness. You're saying as believers, our proper stewardship of God's creation is forgiving in those relationships we're coming across?
Yes, as separation of wheat and tares, or goodness and evil. Forgiveness is an interesting word in that it's much like the relationship word give and take. And so we have forgive and forget. And yet the common prefix, Old English, to forgive and forget, it means away in Old English, or in Greek, apo means away. So it's away from giving, maybe giving. If I came into a room and people saw me avoiding somebody, and after a few times, they would know I'd be irritated or was blaming or I had anger. So to forgive, God says, "I forgive you," Lamentations 3:23, condemnation. And he says in 3:17, "I came that you be not condemned, but be saved." So forgiveness, I think, should be looked at in two halves as part of the whole. One is to give up, give away our attitudes that are not proper. But Jesus, when he forgave us, he didn't stop there. He says, "I give you the truth for life. I am the way, the truth, and life." And if we look, at least for me, somewhere I can find a little bit of that irritation in me that I see in the other person. It's pretty humbling. And when I take that mold out of my eye, it takes skill, and I learn, and we all learn and mature from that, and can actually go to the other person and give goodness. So being human, we're always giving something. We just can't say, "I forgive," and stop. The other half is, what are we going to give? That separates wheat and tares. And much as the process of creation was separation, Barah, it continues in the seventh day. In fact, I think all 6 days, we often separate the 6 days from the seventh. And they're really contiguous, and the seventh day is really important. It's what we're made for. Thanks for that question.
Other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much.
Blessings.
Appreciate it.